Warning: the following program contains adult language, adult themes, and spoilers. Viewer discretion is advised. Good evening and welcome to this week's episode of This Week's Episode. I am your host, Evan Goldstein. With me as always is the bear-friendly reporter, Angie Furnot.
The town I left behind like a perfectly timed elevator fart.
Know-it-all nemesis, Karen Randazzo.
Ah, my trinas!
And sociopathic imaginary friend, Chris Randazzo.
John Hamm is Chris Maloney as Commissioner Gordon.
We here on this week's episode talk television. It was my pick this month. I chose Grimsburg, Season 1, Episode 1, The Pilot. But before we get into that, here's your weekly reminder that you can get in touch with us at mail@geekaid.com. Tell us what you've been watching. Tell us what we should be watching. Specifically, I want a good cartoon. I have been on a cartoon kick as of late, and I want something that I haven't thought of. So reach out, hit us up at mail@geekaid.com, and let me know what you've been watching. Hey, gang.
Hey.
Hiya.
Hello.
So it's been, I think this is the quickest we've done recordings in a while. Like, I feel like we just spoke like 3 days ago, but it's been, what, 2 weeks, I guess? So
2 weeks, too at least.
I feel like, I mean, and it's, you know, we're in the month, we're going to be in the month of May. We were just talking about May the 4th.
Be with you.
Be coming up next week. So what have we been doing, guys? How have you been?
I ordered a bunch of cable ties. Then like they came in ties? A big brick.
Oh, wait. I remember you. So I remember listening to you talk to Dan about this on SAG. And the
They're
zeal
still
and
on my
zest
desk, and I'm holding them now.
That you were talking about cable management, number one, because I have an affinity for cable management myself. But I understand the joy because I got a very similar pack of Velcro cable ties that came all attached together.
Right? I mean, they're a pain in the ass to pull apart as you're using them, but oh my God, they're just such wonderful things.
Now, yours came in the square or the rectangular brick, correct?
Yeah, because there's three different, no, there's one, two, three, four different sizes.
Okay. The last one that I got was in like a circle. So I could put it on almost like a dispenser because the ends, like the male end was attached to the female end so that you just
pull it and
break it off. Oh my God, I still have that spool of cable management. It's amazing.
Yeah, if these were all the same size, a spool would make sense. But since they're four different sizes, I guess they just kind of geometrically fit them together in the most economic way possible.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's quite lovely. I mean, but yeah, it's just sitting here on my desk, which is why it keeps coming up on every podcast I do, because then I just wind up picking it up, playing with it. Well, put the thing down.
That's how it goes.
That's what she said.
Hey-o.
Had to inject something interesting into a conversation.
Hey, these are very interesting.
So hold
these
on a second.
Wait, is this interesting again? I just came back. What?
My understanding is nobody listens to SAG for video games. It's for what they do, lawn maintenance, the irrational, the political stuff that Dan deals with.
It's our claim to fame. Nonsense.
Yuckity yucka nonsense.
The Geekade claim to fame.
All right, then, Karen, what have you been watching?
Wow. That just
that was aggressive.
That was super aggressive.
I'm trying to defend you and your ideas there, Chris. So
you know what
this
makes that podcast popular? Talking about life. Fuck that. Karen, what are you watching?
Well, in between the many shows I did this month,
what did you got? How was our shows? Tell me what's going on.
Good. I did South Jersey Geek Fest. It was my most successful show ever. Made me super happy. It was their 10th anniversary. It was a really great show. And then I did Lehigh Valley Comic Con, and it was completely average, but I traveled 2 hours to get to it. And so now I know.
Gotta love traveling 2 hours for completely average.
What a term.
It was like I was texting or messaging with another vendor friend of mine, and he's like, shoot me a picture of what's going on there, because he was at a different show. And I picked my phone up as high as I could and just shot a picture of the crowd, and he's like, that's too big. That show's too big. That's why you're not making any money. I was like, yeah, you're probably right about that.
So, there are too many people there, or the space... it's an
500 plus vendors.
Oh yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like New York Comic Con. It was in friggin' Allentown. It was just,
wow.
Yeah. And the big guests were like, it was a woman from Knight Rider.
Okay.
And like two of the orphans from Annie who weren't Annie.
Orphan one and orphan two that no one cares about. Amazing.
Like, they had names.
No, they didn't. No orphans had names in that movie other than Annie. It's right there in the title. Orphan Annie.
And I'm getting ready for my art walk show on Saturday, which is one of my favorites, and it's in my backyard. And I don't know, I have a lot of stuff coming down the pike. I'm very busy and very excited. I'm working really hard.
Heck yeah, I'm proud of you.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah.
Good.
I wish I could do it full time. It's so frustrating. So frustrating. There's so many more things I would do.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, oh, can you make kits? I'm like, yeah. If I make kits, I don't have time to make any of my pieces that I'll sell. But yeah, I could make kits.
What do you mean? What do you mean kits? Like buying...
Like, sell the pattern and all the materials to make the thing, and then people would make it themselves instead of buying it finished from me.
Got you. Okay.
Couldn't
so,
you
know,
make...
requiring physical inventory and a lot. And
that, okay, so
together.
That, yeah, okay. Because, like, we just did a show and someone handed Ange a watercolor painting kit, and mm-hmm. I think that's adorable and like that seems like that's like
they did. Wait, what are we talking about?
It's the painting kit from
Morgan.
Is that her name?
Creations. That was the axolotl. That's actually that was not a watercolor painting kit. That was a 3D model painting kit.
Is there a 3D model in it?
Yeah. So you get like a primed. It's almost like if you get like miniatures for D&D, but it was like a 3D printed Minecraft axolotl. It was super cute. And
well, then we should take that out of the garage.
Yeah, probably.
I just thought it was like a generic watercolor kit, because it borderline came in like a Happy Meal box.
Yes, it did, and it was adorable. But yeah, I mean, she makes pretty good money on those, so like maybe there is something there, Karen. I don't know.
I'm sure there is. Like, I want to. It's not that I don't want to.
I don't know. It sounds like you don't want to. No.
Shut up. I do just have to shout out maybe the most... My favorite thing that I've seen at a show so far this season is at this Allentown show. I have to shout out these two people who will never hear this. They were cosplaying as Ted Lasso and Coach Beard.
Awesome.
And, like... Nice. I saw them at the table next to me, and I was like, oh, they're coming here next. And then I looked down, and I looked up, and they went, like, across the aisle from me. And I was like, oh, no, are they going to skip my table? And so they were looking at stuff, and one of them looked up, and I, like, waved. And I was like, oh, Coach Beard, love your outfit. So they both came over, and they gave me a little Green Army Man.
Because
I knew who they were.
Aww.
That was my favorite thing that happened. And you reminded me of that, of we were talking about our more obscure pieces that don't sell, and how if somebody gets it, you might as well just give it to them.
Yep.
Yeah. So, in that vein, I got a free Green Army Man that made me happy.
That is super cute, though, and I love it. And I have really... that's the stuff that I'm here for, though. Like, That's what I love about shows. I'm actually waitlisted right now on Heroes Con, which is like the biggest show that I usually do, and it'll be I've done it 3 times now, and this is like the most applications I've ever had for artists, and so I guess I waited too long because I, even as a returning artist, got waitlisted.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Sorry, sis.
It's okay. It's just like, I like hearing that you're doing multiple shows in markets and whatnot, because we've been working on that a little bit here, and I'm
to
finding.
Some success. You've been doing.
Yeah, like I'm finding that I do well, and now it's like, it's one of those things where this weekend I'm glad I have off because I have to do so much prep for next weekend, but then like, I have a show next weekend, I have the weekend after that, and then I have a weekend off to prep for Carolina Fear Fest, which I'm really pumped about because that's my first like all horror show. But I have had no time to prep inventory for these events. Like it's really hard. I don't think people fully appreciate how much goes into having
show
to work
prep.
Full-time and have a life and then make stuff. Yeah. And prep.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, that's what I'm saying about, like, I wish I could do this full time. Like, if I didn't have to do my job,
yeah,
you know, I would do more shows. I opt out of doing things because I can't be working every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, not sustainable. So,
and it's,
for multiple reasons,
it's wild because a lot of people that attend shows don't fully get it that. Smaller vendors. So like we'll be set up at a show and I try to do as many things with Ange's art to sell it without her having to do something extra to it. So I'm you know, having transfers and decals and stuff, and I'm trying to make shirts and books and whatnot. And like, granted, that's a great source of income, and someone, you know, will pick up a book and it sells, you know, for $20. But after that I don't have the buying power to buy 40 books to have them sitting there waiting. When that one sells, mm-hmm. it's me getting on Amazon, trying to find the best deal, then getting the decal, you know, from another company. And then that all takes time. Then once that time is done and the stuff gets to us, then it takes the effort to put it, you know, to actually build the product, to then fold it up, put it on a table, and then 3 minutes later, it's knock on wood, gone again kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
right.
it's tough for a lot of smaller vendors, especially when we are trying to, especially at larger shows, trying to keep up with the places that have buying power. Like, you know, T-Turtle sells a bajillion shirts at a show. That is just, they're just regular snarky art shirts. That's it. You know, and there's some traditional artists somewhere in that show trying to do the same thing without that, you know, world of support behind them, trying to, you know, just make their way. So I'm just glad that,
yeah.
you know, your shows are working out for you, because
thanks.
It gets tough. We fully understand. Like, what was this last show that we did?
Make Wilmington Weird.
Yes. That was a good show.
I loved that show. That was an example of like, when you know a show is good, it can get rained out and people still come. And that's exactly what happened.
Awesome.
And like, yeah, man, what's crazy to me is we do a show called Crafts and Crystals Fair, right? And then all these people will come out all the time. It's like the same, almost the same group of people every time. And it gets pretty like
if
small.
It's not the same people, it's a representative of the same thing.
Yeah. But we'll get, I think on average, maybe like 300 people come through the show, right? So like, you know, not a ton, but we still do well. We make money, like, we have a good time. We love the vendors there. We love the people who come through. We love supporting the show. So we continue to, you know, attend and do the best we can.
It helps that it's 10 minutes from home.
Yes. I will do that show always, probably because of that. But one
yes,
of the things...
I have a show like that.
Go ahead.
She understands that.
Oh, okay.
No, yes. Just that I have... the show that I'm doing this weekend is in my backyard.
Yes.
So I'll always do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we have this show, right? But then Make Wilmington Weird... All these people came out for the show, and one of the things that was interesting is it was in this, like, closer to downtown venue, and people were like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this in Wilmington. And I was like, yo, half the vendors here are literally from this Crafts and Crystals Fair show that I do. Like, what are you even talking about? And it's just so funny how, like, the name of the show and who represented the show made a difference in how the show was perceived, received, and, like, there were just some slight differences. Like, they had a fire spinner, they had glass blowing. Like, those are things that wouldn't typically happen at Crafts and Crystals because it's an entirely indoor venue. And, like, it does change the vibe a little bit. But, I mean, it really was so similar. And I was like, how do people not?
Well, it's on the other. It's on the other side of town, honey.
I know. This it's is crazy.
We were down at the pretentious side of the tracks where everybody's like, "Oh my God!"
I don't know, man. The people coming out to that show were freaking weirdos, and I loved it. They were my people. It was great.
Where I, at one point in time, I was there was a fire spinner, and I guess there was I want to say fire dancer because there was very little spinning involved. She was just like just waving fans of fire in her face. I'm like, she's going to hurt herself.
She was new. She was so cute. Did you see there was a point where she was inside because we were just inside the building and they have these big garage doors that open up so that you can like kind of access from inside and outside. And there was like a fire spinner, like the, or yeah, she was like the fire dancer who came inside and was just using these little LED lights. Mm-hmm. And there, it was so cute. It was like something out of a storybook, but like warped because there were just little kids with their hands, like their little hands tucked under their chins and then like sitting on the floor and like cross-legged and like just kind of staring up at her mesmerized. And I was like, normally you see this in like Christmas books and here we are like watching her, like it was just so surreal and adorable and hilarious all at the same time. And I was like, this is literally why I do shows like this.
Right next door to us was a cotton candy vendor. Mm-hmm. And he was a young guy and he was really trying this show, but he's gonna have to tone it down just a skosh because he's gonna tire himself out at a certain point because like he was getting, I'm gonna say, 12 feet away from the cotton candy dispenser.
Oh yeah.
So there was like this ribbon of cotton candy that was going to the stick that he was, you know, twirling up, as opposed to just like people like, just give me the candy. Just give me the giant fuzzy ball of sugar.
Y'all, he gave us a stick of cotton candy that was like half the size of my body. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, it was probably about 18 to
It was like Marge Simpson's hair. Yeah,
it was gigantic. And it was, and that came about because he had no line. So he was just building one and building it and building it for no one. And then he finished whatever sugar was left and he turned to me. He's like, you want it? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. That's far too. And then before I can finish saying that, she jumps in between and is like, yeah, I'll take it. And I'm like, oh, that means I'll take it. So she ate a bunch. I ate a bunch. And then we passed off at least half of it to another human being.
I loved it. I loved everything about it. I'd do it again.
Yeah, I know you would. But that was a great show. We had a good time. We did well. Would, you know, 4 stars. I mean, the rain was rough, but,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
But, yeah. But y'all, like, this is the thing. Like, this is how we get out and socialize and, like, do stuff. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what you and Dan talk about sometimes, Chris, because, like, I know, like, Dan's doing his thing and you're doing your thing, but unless I'm, like, out at shows and attending, like, things in the community, I'm like, I don't know what to talk to people about. Like, I'm so awkward. I'm like, do you like Star Wars? Because I don't. You want to talk about it anyway? Let's go. Like,
Dan and Chris have an innate ability to talk about nothing.
It's beautiful.
For a very long time.
It's absolutely beautiful.
It's
just
a glorious relationship. It's beautiful. It really, really
is.
It's
also known each other forever. So.
Yeah, but you think they'd be done by now. Like, like you think they would be finished.
You guys just babble.
No, it's not. There's always a concise conversation, and it varies so wildly. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful situation.
That, to me, is babbling. That's what I do with my friends.
All right, so anybody else got some fun topics, or should we just dive into television now? Okay, good talk.
I was going to just say that Chris had Ellie home for Take Your Child to Work Day, and it was kind of adorable.
Aww. That's so sweet.
You guys, that's adorable. Did she tear the place up? Did you get fired?
No, no. She helped edit a theater near you, though.
I'm scared to ask what that looked like in reality.
No, it was fine. Okay. It's just like I told her what to do and she did it. And, you know, she helped me write social media posts for SAG today and picked a picture for Throwback Thursday. It was a good time.
Nice.
I want her to write my social media posts.
And then she came upstairs and edited like 3 documents with me. And she was like, "Your job's more fun than Daddy's." And I'm like,
"What?
Well, fucking shit."
What?
Absolutely not.
Listen, Karen, she's a Disney villain. Therefore, she likes all of the stuff no one else does.
Categorically incorrect, child. So wrong.
This is just how
literally part of my day with her was watching an episode of the cartoon I'm going to talk about on the show tonight, and she still thought editing documents with mommy was more fun. She's crazy.
She's crazy.
I love it.
Right.
All right, so I guess we could talk about television now.
There we go.
I guess.
What do you got, Karen?
I'm sure there was something else to talk about, but damn if I...
I real quick will just talk about Call the Midwife, because that's really all I've had time for in my life. It's now season 13?
Jeez,
crazy. What?
Have they not gotten a hold of this woman yet?
It is 1969. So lots of historic things happening. The moon landing has happened in this season.
Okay.
Which it was like so weird to me because it was part of the episode, but it was not the main part. Like
Call the Midwife on the Moon.
Call the Midwife on the Moon.
Call the Moonwife.
Like, I guess because it's a British set show and like the moon landing was an American thing, it just wasn't like everybody was psyched to watch it, but it wasn't like the focus of that episode. It was just like, you know, oh, we got more babies to deliver. Oh, and like later we're gonna watch the moon landing on TV. It was kind of neat to see like the perspective, because you hear when you like absorb pop culture about the moon landing, it's usually like about the moon, like the people who work at NASA and the actual astronauts and maybe their wives back on Earth or whatever. But like to just see it from the perspective of people who don't have anything to do with it and are just observing it as a historic event was kind of neat.
Interesting.
That's different. Never thought about that.
Kids that were like, you know, just kids at that age, like watching it with their parents, and they grow up to be like adults, probably around our parents' age, given when this thing is set. So that was neat. There's one like completely like they still have lots of, you know, they're like it's medically historically accurate. Like things are coming up that, you know, were just known about then, that like are, you know, commonplace things that we know about pregnancy and giving birth now.
Mm-hmm.
So it continues to be like interesting in that way. There's one absolutely bonkers thing that is happening, which is there's like one of the midwives married this I think he's a lord or something. He's a rich guy.
He's got some cash. Got it.
He was widowed. His wife, I think she died in childbirth with their second child. So like he initially came onto the show as like just another dad in the whole like situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then like he ended up, you know, falling for one of the midwives, like, and this took years. Ridiculousness. But like, I don't know if he is related to Lord Grantham from Downton Abbey or what, but he like lost all his money. And they didn't really explain it. They were just, you know, he inherited this company from his dad, and he, like, took, you know, business risks, and none of them paid off. And it kind of came out of nowhere. Like, all of a sudden, they're like, they remembered this character existed and needed something to do with him. So they were like, oh, we know, we'll have him lose his fortune. So,
damn.
But he's like, but, and he's been hiding it from his wife the whole time. Okay. Which I guess makes sense because, like, misogyny in the 60s and whatever. But at the same time, it's like pretty contrary to this, how this character's behaved. Like, he's been a pretty, like, decent dude this whole time he's been on the show. Mm. And then all of a sudden he turns around and he's like, nope, I'm gonna, like, hide this. I'm gonna be masculine and hide this shame from my wife, and our whole family is ruined now. And then she finds out about it, and she tries to help him, like, find a new job or whatever. And he just is getting pissed at her, like, that people know.
Wow.
Like, how dare you? And yeah, how, and he's getting mad at her for, like, shopping all the time when she didn't know that they didn't have any money. It's just, it's really bothering me. Like, what is wrong with this guy? So I don't know if there's any other Call the Midwife fans out there on the Discord or whatever, because I always forget Discord exists. But if you are out there, what the fuck is going on with Matthew is my question.
Well, okay, wait. Is it possible, like, did you look up, like, who's writing the episodes? Like, did they have a change in writing staff?
It's possible. I did not do that or think of that.
Oh, well, there you go. There's a path of exploration, maybe. I don't know. Possibility for why.
Yeah. It's possible. I don't know. It's really making me... Maybe it's not as out of character as I think, but I don't know. The other thing is, I don't know if I've been desensitized from so many seasons of it, but, like, I used to weep openly at this show every week. Like, people would be having babies, and I'd just be like, oh my god, her life is so beautiful. Oh, she almost died, but then she didn't. Or, like, whatever sad, sappy, sweet bullshit they put in there. I am no longer like that. Like, I just don't cry every week, and I don't know whether it's, like, being that far removed from, like, having my own babies, or, you know, my medications having been adjusted over the years.
Your heart is hardened. It's fine. It happens to
my
the best
heart,
of us.
Yeah, it's just, I don't care about these damn babies anymore. There was one thing that made me almost, that did make me cry. They almost killed one of the, like, main, like, this side character, but he's been on the show, like, the whole time. And I was like, don't you kill Fred. If you kill Fred, I will freaking riot. They didn't kill Fred, you guys. Spoiler okay. alert. All right. It aired a couple of weeks ago. It's not a spoiler.
Fred has
but,
been saved.
Oh, they almost killed Fred, and I was just like, gonna riot.
Well, I'm glad that they didn't. I will say...
I don't know who Fred is.
Yeah, well, Karen cares, and therefore okay. I care.
There it is. Nice.
You're welcome.
He's a sweet older guy who, like, did the maintenance for the nuns in the whatever convent where they, you know, base the midwife business out of.
Mm.
And he's also married to this woman that runs a local business, and they adopted this, like, adult son who has Down syndrome. And he's just, like, the sweetest guy. And, like, he was doing something and he got a cut on his hand and it got infected and he didn't take care of it and he almost died.
Oh, like,
damn.
Don't you do that to Fred. He does not deserve it.
Aw. Okay, so now context. Yeah, I could see. Aw.
Yeah.
So, wait, can I go next on my show?
Yeah go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
go for
I
it.
Feel like... This is an interesting segue because you're saying, like, you really don't feel anything about certain aspects, at least, of the show. Like, you're watching it. I still feel like maybe you enjoy it at least a little bit.
Oh, no, I love the show. It just doesn't make me sob anymore like it used to.
So I had a moment that I almost rewound and made Evan watch on the show that I've been watching again because I went back to watching Outlander. I just realized that, like, it wasn't, I don't know, like, it seems as though we've come to a point where we're close enough to the end, and I had gotten so far in the journey, and, like, maybe I'd taken enough of a break from it that now I would go back and reconnect. Well, what actually happened is I forgot half the shit that happened on the show. So now there's, like, all this stuff with these characters that's going on, and, like, Claire and Jamie are the two main characters, as a reminder to anyone else who, you know, probably doesn't give a shit. But, like, all of these characters around them over time that hadn't been introduced have died. Like, we're at the point in the show where, like, almost no one from their original circle is either on the show or alive, like, whether it's because they were left behind in Scotland because the Jamie and Claire had traveled to America and set up in North Carolina, or it's because, like, yeah, they did. And it was just, like, kind of this crazy return to the show where there was stuff going on, and I was like, who is this person? Why does this matter? Am I supposed to care about what's happening here? We're still waiting for the point in the plot where there was supposed to be a fire and they were going to die, and that hasn't happened. And it finally freaking happened this season. Spoiler alert, they didn't die. The fire was started early, and therefore their deaths were avoided, thus changing the possible future, but not enough that it seems to have caused any real problem. So, you know, time wibbly wobbly, timey wobbly. But
I feel like that's a different show, but I don't know.
I don't know. I learned all of my time travel things from Doctor Who. I don't know what you want me to tell you. So basically, the thing that got me on the show, though, was, like, I've been watching this, and half the time it's just on in the background. I'm like, well, the scenery is pretty. But I do still really appreciate the chemistry between Claire and Jamie. And there was a scene recently where Claire was just mourning all of the loss because her daughter had come back in time to warn her about this potential fire because they had been doing research in the future where they're all, where, you know, Claire's originally from, and just trying to better understand the life that her mother might have lived in the past. And then they found what appeared to be a newspaper article reporting this fire where Jamie and Claire would have died. And so she freaks out and she's like, this cannot happen, like, as if it matters, but whatever. So she goes back in time to warn her mother, and many, many things happen. She ends up getting stuck in the past, but Roger, the person that she loves, like, ends up coming after her to, like, be with her, and he's like, you know, I don't want you to go through this alone, blah, blah, blah. Well, after all this, they had, like, two kids in the past, and then one of the kids had a heart defect that required them to go back to the future.
Marty!
Still a thing. So, they return, and Claire is just devastated, as one can imagine, because at this point in the story, it's not likely that they're going to see each other again. So this could be a permanent farewell. And this woman just had to say goodbye to her daughter, her son-in-law, and her two grandbabies. And, like, I can only imagine that that would be incredibly devastating because it's not like they just moved. Like, they literally went through time. So this whole process happens, and she's sitting in bed with Jamie, and she just had this moment where she, like, didn't know what to feel, and she had experienced some other trauma recently, so she wanted to have, like, an intimate moment with him and then just, like, couldn't do it, and she just starts sobbing, and he did, like, the sweetest thing. Like, he just kind of pulled her into his lap, and then he held her, and he was like, feel what you need to feel and mourn the loss of everyone we've lost, and I'll be here when you're ready. And I was just like, damn. Like, he just made so much space for her in that moment. And I just felt like it was really wonderful, thoughtful writing that showed this, like, beautiful relationship between them. And, like, another thing that kind of demonstrates, like, what intimacy looks like in a long-term relationship and a beautiful marriage. And it felt so appropriate for these characters, but it was just, like, I have been waiting for her to be vulnerable with him for so long in the show. Like, that was the thing that frustrated me previously, because she wasn't opening up to him, and that was not normal, I guess. Like, I don't know. She's always a little resistant to it as a character, but, like, it just felt frustrating the way that she was going about things, and then I felt like she was finally managing it with him, and the way that he was there for her was just incredible. And I don't know why it hit me the way that it did, but it struck me in such a way that I had to tell Evan about it, and then I like went back and wanted to rewatch the scene, and I don't know, there was just something beautiful in the writing. So I think that the nature of the show has changed a lot over time, and the characters have grown and changed with it, and that I'm appreciating it in a new way, because I'm not going into the show anymore asking it to be what it was. I'm just kind of here for what it is. So, yeah, I'm surprised at what I'm enjoying, despite having no fucking idea what's going on half the time. So, it's great.
I've only seen a little bit of Outlander, but I have one question, which is, I know that there is some time travel because, like, I don't know.
It's the premise of the show.
Right. I know that she went back in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there eventually is some returning to the future and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Do they figure out how the time travel works? Because they seem to be able to go back and forth at will now.
Sort of. So the reason why I said that she might not see her daughter again is because basically there are these, like, mini Stonehenges is the best way I could put it. They're like these vertical stone structures in the ground that that's where Claire traveled through the very first time. And
right.
I don't actually know, like, now that I know how the stones work, I'm curious to see if they followed the rules that first time. But basically what it is you have to have, like, a precious stone, like a gemstone of some kind, and then you go to the stones and you have to, there's a thing where, like, people who are affected by them can basically hear almost like a humming or a sound that comes from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like a frequency that only certain people can hear, and those are the people who end up being the travelers. And Claire and her daughter and son-in-law obviously are able to. And in order to travel back and forth, you have to use those precious stones. And when you travel, those stones are basically absorbed in the journey. It's almost like the toll.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason why it's unlikely they'd be able to go back and forth, because, you know, they cost money in all times. And the only reason they got access to some of them in this most recent scenario was because they were able to barter some things and were gifted another.
So the time travel is possible. It's just difficult.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, they can go back and forth whenever they want. Okay, got it.
Yes.
What's funny is I popped in while she was watching one, and the scene that I had came in on, shockingly, was not a sex scene.
First time ever.
They were in the process of melting down gold and turning it into
musket balls.
And I don't know what
balls.
I don't know
gold balls.
What the previous part of that story was, but it turns out what I gathered in context was that they did this in the past. They put it in a little treasure chest, hid it so that their kids in the future can find it. They left them a note. Now I bounce back in, and it's the kids reading the letter from the parents saying, hey, if we left you a surprise, if you need it, there's riches, just, you know, if you need it, it's there. And then both of them look at each other and go, you know what? Let's just leave it. It's going to be fine. We're good. We don't need it. Then I leave the room, come back maybe a half hour later, and they've just bought this giant castle. The roof needs repair. Like, I walked away and they were fine. I came back and like, yeah, we're gonna need that gold. Like, we need that gold now. Like, damn.
Yeah, I will say that's one of the things I'm not as interested in, that like part of the story. I really do like seeing how their lives are in the future just by comparison to the past, because they've now reached a point where they're in the 70s. But I'm bothered by, first of all, like, these two characters left the past and then it just like fast forwarded. Like, the next scene was just them like being okay and being in Scotland. And like, the thing about the stones is that they transport you like in the same geographic location. So they should not, or I guess if you think about where you want to go, they do take you. So maybe they had focused on wanting to go to Scotland, but like, they're in friggin' Scotland in the future. And I don't know how they got there, because they left in America. And like, it's just, you just spent at least 2 to 5 years. Nope, they have like a toddler. They spent at least 3 to 5 years like in the past. And now they just like, boop, back into the future. No one's asking questions. Like, you're just suddenly okay. Like, you had weird ass freaking clothes on and no money. Like, how did you even get anywhere? So I have questions about that. I don't know if it's something that I have to be patient and they're going to address it, because right now it doesn't look like they're going to. Right now it just looks like they showed up in the future, they're cool, and then they went to freaking Lollybrock, and they're like, we're going to buy this place. Like, are you? How? Why? With what?
Suspension of disbelief, honey.
Yeah, but, like, that's the thing. There's certain parts of this where I can't, because and again, I've been away from it so long that, like, maybe I should have suspended more disbelief in the past, too, or maybe I was more forgiving. But I'm looking at this now, like, no. It just doesn't make sense. No. Yeah. So that part, not loving it. But like I said, their storyline, I'm just more interested about like seeing like how the history has like traveled into the future. Cause I think as a person who, you know, is living in the present, who often wonders about like historic buildings and landmarks, or like I live in a modern city, but there's old structures. And I sometimes wonder, like, I love those books that's like an assembly of photos. It's like, this is what this place looked like 100 or 200 or 300 years ago. Like, that's really cool to me. And I will try to imagine how something could have evolved and grown. And oftentimes I can't even like really compare like one street, like the streets now, to what it might've looked like 100 years ago. And so I think this show kind of engages me in the sense that it's playing on my curiosity about the stories we tell ourselves about a place and its history and the stuff we don't know, because these are characters that were in that building in the past and know how some of the scars were given to the space, essentially. They know its histories and they know its stories because they literally lived them. And I think that that's really, really cool. And that's what's hooking me. So I'm like, I haven't suspended my disbelief, but I'm interested enough in that part of it that I am intrigued. And I just wish sometimes that like, I don't know. I think that's why somebody would write a series like Outlander, because it is that wondering of like, what do we really know about the history of a place or an object that we find? And when you go to a museum, for example, and you look at all these things and you don't really know what you're looking at, it has no context to you, but it could have been deeply meaningful to someone else in another time. It's really hard to wrap my head around. And I think that this show kind of creates a context for that helps fulfill a part of me and my appreciation and wonderings, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Yeah, wacko. Yes.
Yeah, I guess it's, well, I mean, like, you know, when I was a kid, I went on a trip to England and I had no comprehension of anything. Truly, I didn't really know the history of the space I was going into. But I remember being there and being like, it feels like it was almost as if the history was tangible. Like it was like a real feeling when I would be in some of those spaces, like you could just feel the age of a space. And it, and I don't mean that in like a woo-woo-y thing. I think it's more of like a, you know, just looking at things around me, and my brain is sort of translating like just how different the architecture and maybe the things that I was seeing would be from like, you know, my home in America. But I'll never forget that feeling. And I think it has piqued a curiosity in me for probably the entirety of my life that has made me want to explore more places. And this show, like, I feel like this show has some comprehension of what that wondering is like. I don't know. I'm weird. The end.
All right. Thank you, hon. Chris, I'm going to go real quick because I'm going to be talking about something old as well. And I know you're talking about something new. I'm going to go real quick because I've been watching, I'm trying to rewatch X-Men, the animated series, because I want to watch 97 and have it mean something to me. So this show, as we all know, is amazing. What I did not realize, and so as I'm watching this, it's on in the, like, I'm watching with half an eye because I'm working as it's on in the background. And, it's a heavy show. Like they deal with a lot of really intense things. But I acquire things via nefarious means, and they are on my Plex. Now, apparently the Plex labels them title wise in a slightly different order than the files that I got. And it has flipped and flopped a bunch of things. So every once in a while, as I'm working, listening to it, going, wow, this is such a great show. Wait a minute. I feel like I'm missing something, or this is out of order. Or so I'm giving you heads up. If you decide to rewatch, I'm in the process of fixing all of that. But
I would be rewatching on Disney Plus.
Okay, good. I did. Have they done a high res version of it yet, or is it still?
I don't know. I watched a couple episodes on my phone.
Okay.
But that was on my phone. I couldn't tell if it would look good on a big TV. But
with the popularity of 97, I can't imagine that they're not going to up-res it, because right now, like, DVD quality is the highest out there, or like 480p. But as I'm watching this show, it's bringing back so many wonderful memories of that time, like watching it like real time back in the 90s. Like today, I think it was today, it was either today or yesterday, I watched the episode where the Beast is helping a blind girl get her sight back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is heart-wrenching. And like the savagery of her father because he's a mutant and not like just intervening, and her like falling in love. I'm like, oh my God, this is a child's cartoon. Why are there so many feelings? And I remembered it's because it was a 90s children's cartoon and we were raised differently.
Yeah, it still looks like DVD quality on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
It hasn't been remastered.
Well, and I don't know if they're going to or not, but my Facebook feed is filled every week with X-Men 97 stuff, and I don't want to dive into that without at least some sort of refresher, because like I said, there's a lot of heavy things dealt with in this show. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. I've been like, I gotta be halfway through season 3 by now. Like, it's just cruising by, because I mean, of course they are short episodes, but it's like 2 to 5 part storylines. Like, it's a very rare occasion where it would be just a one-off, and even those one-offs are like the when they go to Mojo Vision, or like where they
Mojo World,
yeah. Mojo World, that's it. Like, that was a one-off with like Longshot, was it like they were pulling from so much like X-Men lore for an animated series that was geared towards younger people. It's so well done. So yet again, everybody needs to watch
it. Kind of buckle down for season 5. prepare for some disappointment.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I remember season five being not great, but it's leading me to, in essence, season six, which apparently has, for all intents and purposes, been great. So
yeah, it's phenomenal. I was going to mention it again this week, real quick, just because this most recent episode was pretty fun. But yeah, I started rewatching, before 97. I started like just kind of booting up the first series and was just quoting it line for line. I was like, yeah, I'm not ready to do this yet. I still know this show too well.
Dang.
I just have the whole thing memorized. I watched this so many times as a kid. I had all the VHS tapes, and I just, specifically seasons one and two were just like, knocked my socks off. And like, yeah, they do deal with heavy stuff, but like, man, this show is melodramatic. Like,
yeah.
Extremely melodramatic.
That's right. That's what you gotta love in a good cartoon is melodrama. Yes.
I think it shaped me as a person and probably explains a little bit about who I am today.
I mean, it's a very valid point. Very valid. So
yeah, season five's a shit show, but the new X-Men 97 really cleans things up quite a bit. I mean, obviously it does. Everything that happened in season five is canon.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely picks up right after that laid down, but ooh boy. Just looking at the episode listings, I was like, oh man, Fifth Horseman, Jubilee's Fairy Tale Theater. This was rough.
And it's funny because they had the like the by the title of the episode you could sort of guess what's going to happen. Like I don't know, the end of season four, there's an episode called Xavier Remembers, and I feel like that's just a flashback episode. I feel like in a cartoon they're going to give me a flash, and I'm okay with that. I'll watch it. It's gonna be good for me.
Highlight reel.
Yeah, but 10 out of 10. I can't get enough of this show. It's such a it's like a warm hug again, because I haven't seen it in a very long time. So there's that. So that's it.
Remembers.
Chris,
I'm trying to remember if that Xavier Remembers was a I don't remember there being a clip show. What season was that in?
It's episode 16 of season 4.
See?
So it's after the four-part storyline of Beyond Good and Evil, the holiday episode of Have Yourself a Morlock Little Xmas.
See, Disney Plus doesn't have that listed there. Dave, you remember. Oh, it's episode 5.
See, like, and that's the thing, like, for season 4?
Yeah, according to Disney Plus, it's episode 5 of season 4.
See, so episodes 4 and 5 are Proteus, parts 1 and 2. So, like, that's weird. Like, that was the problem.
Proteus? Oh, wow, yeah, that's, yeah, I was like, this comes right after Sanctuary, parts 1 and 2, and right before Courage.
What is it? So it's in the listing that I have, it's One Man's Worth, Courage, Proteus, Sanctuary, Beyond Good and Evil, and then a bunch of one-offs.
Wow. No, this goes Juggernaut Returns, Deal with the Devil, Sanctuary Part 1, Part 2, then Xavier Remembers.
I see, and that's the thing with dealing with... okay, so you got one listing for Disney+. I know Plex servers have another listing of episode titles. I have a program that adds titles to the metadata for the files that has another listing. So like, if I don't have like YouTube open to give me like this is, you know, minutes 4 through 5, so I can, you know, title it up. I'm just guessing right now at what I'm watching. So
right now, I'm curious what IMDb says. Let's see. IMDb for season 4. Yeah, it looks like the IMDb is listing them in air date.
Okay.
And that is One Man's Worth 1 and 2, Courage, Proteus 1 and 2, Sanctuary 1 and 2, Beyond Good and Evil parts 1, 2, and 3, 4.
Yep.
Morlock Christmas. Yeah. Okay, so this year going by air date. I wonder why they're in this order on Disney+. I wonder if this was some sort of like intended storyline order instead of air date order.
Well, I mean, and I would hope not, because the beginning of every episode,
previously,
everyone
on X-Men
gives you an in-depth previously on.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So that's what I've been watching. So Chris, what do you got?
Wait, before you tell us, Chris, I have a quick side question.
Okay.
Do you think loath cats have buttholes like regular cats?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
All right. There will be context soon.
Oh, Christ.
I can't confirm, but since cat is in the title, I have to assume yes.
Hey, listen, you're the star whore, okay? I'm just here.
Fair
asking
enough.
Questions, learning things. Cat butts.
Cat butts.
All day. All day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, you were saying?
Let's see. There was, well, obviously, X-Men 97 I look forward to every week, followed by the continued comforting mediocrity of The Bad Batch, which I haven't even watched this week's episode yet because I just can't be fucking bothered. But no, I wanted to talk about a show called Sandland that I asked Evan to get for me. Sandland is the last original anime project from Akira Toriyama before he passed. I've watched the first two episodes and it's pretty neat. It's a very pretty show. It's just wonderfully animated. I saw this style of animation in the most recent Dragon Ball Z movie that they had out in theaters, which was really cool. And it's like a weird, you know what it is? It's the Marvel Zombie, the What If Marvel What If animation if it was good.
Oh,
that doesn't make sense. How?
It's because you apply Akira Toriyama's art direction to it, and like that style of animation where it's like hand drawn, but it's all very CG. Like it's clearly CG, but all the textures and stuff were hand drawn in the first place. Kind of, it's very weird. But the show's gorgeous. It's really really nice to look at. It's about this. They've been pretty scant with details thus far. It's we're in this desert world where there's demons and then there's humans, and obviously they don't get along, but there's no water, and there's some sort of evil piece of shit king who's like selling water, this demon prince gives these kids some water, and the sheriff of the local town is just like, wait a sec. What if demons aren't bad guys? This demon just gave a kid some water. They can't be evil. So they needed some help getting through the desert to try to find this oasis. And he went over to the demon land and they were like, yeah, sure, we'll help. So they went and hop into this car, and then they're traveling across the desert trying to find an oasis. And they discover that the king is hoarding all the water, which is why there's no water anywhere. Because like it won't even rain. Like there's just like you have to buy water from the king because like clearly no water's even evaporating to turn into clouds. So like people are effed without anything. And the demons and the human dude are working together to try and get through the desert and find this thing. And the action sequences are great. They hijack the tank. The little demon prince guy is a strong fighter. Got typical spiky hair Toriyama art. It's nice. I don't have a ton to say about it, I guess. Just after two episodes, I wasn't blown away by it, but I'll probably stick with it. I don't know how much I will stick with it, because I'm still very slowly working my way through the original Dragon Ball, which is, you know, I'm scratching the Toriyama itch, but like, man, it's fillery. I'm in my least favorite point in Dragon Ball is when he's fighting the Red Ribbon Army. It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
What is this show on? Because you asked me to get it, but like I'm seeing it's listed on Disney Plus and on Hulu.
Yeah, so it's on Hulu, which technically is in Disney Plus now because they merged Disney Plus and Hulu.
Okay.
So if you have a Hulu account, then you have access to all of your Hulu stuff for Disney Plus. So yeah, it's currently airing on Hulu. think there's, what, two episodes left in this season.
So it is a current show. Like, it is still going
on. It's brand new. It's brand new. It is still ongoing. It's based off of a manga, which, again, I'm really not sure what is happening with all this stuff since Toriyama passed, because he was kind of in charge of, he was in charge of Sandland and the upcoming Dragon Ball Daima show. And I don't know who's taking over for him or what any of that really means, because he does have a pretty specific specific writing style, I suppose. But yeah, I guess we'll find out. So far, so good.
Cool.
But okay, yeah. So wait, you said this is the last thing he worked on. Did he like have a complete, did he have like a plan for this, I guess?
I'm not sure. I know it's the last original thing he worked on. Okay. As far as I know, it's the last original thing he worked, because he also is working on a new Dragon Ball show. So I'm not really sure how far he got in any of it. I'm not really sure how far the Sandland anime is. Because I know they just they're releasing a game, a video game based on Sandland real soon. And they just, what is it, the company, I think Namco's working on the game, and they just like shared on Twitter for the people who are working on the game that what Toriyama saw of the game before he died, he thought was really cool looking.
Okay.
So is the game cel-shaded? Like, have you seen imagery for it? Because I keep seeing different
two. I have to assume it is.
All right, because I keep seeing two different art styles of like the same image. It's like them in the what looks to be like a Jeep, and it's one is very, you know, animation style, and then one was cel shaded, and I did not know because I have not watched this at all. So,
like apparently the manga was from like 2000, so the manga he did a long time ago, and then the anime series. Yeah, I can't say I know enough about it to say for sure. I just know that it is that's the video game. Where is the information on Sandland, the anime series?
So many questions.
And it's like seriously. It came out of nowhere. Like I look at a lot of video or television and movie sites, and like I hadn't seen anything about this up until the point in time you mentioned it, and there was like 10 to 11 episodes available, so sort of snuck under the radar.
Let's see, it looks like on the anime was announced in 2022.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I'm not sure what his involvement was in this now. Maybe I'm wrong about this as far as Toriyama's involvement or you know, how much he worked directly on the anime. It does certainly smell like his style, but it is adapting his work just from 20 years ago. I don't know. It's going to take some research on my part, but it's an interesting show. Not like crazy amazing or anything, but I heard it gets real good. So I might stick.
See. There you go.
I mean, it still sounds like, if especially being the fan that you are with like DBZ and everything else, like it still sounds like if it has the essence, even if it's not entirely him, it's honoring his style and his work.
So, right.
Yeah.
You'll probably have a great time. I want to hear more about it later, though.
There's your homework.
Yeah. Report back. Let us know.
Let's see. Let's see. Final 7 episodes comprise the story of Angel Hero, which Toriyama newly wrote for the series. Toriyama also named the two arcs and designed new characters. However, he died before the anime premiered on March 1st, 2024. Okay, so he did work on the series, but he died before it actually. Bummer.
Okay.
Oh. Excuse me. Very good. Well, I just looked at the picture that you just sent. Very funny. Very cute. All right. Well, I think that about wraps the first half up, unless anybody has anything else that they want to touch on.
Cat butts.
Karen and I watched the new Roadhouse movie, and it was great.
Oh, my God. It was outstanding.
Yeah, it was amazing. I I don't understand why there was any hate for that movie. It was exactly what it was supposed to be.
Just must have been from before anybody had seen it, because how dare you remake Roadhouse? And then they were like, well, because of this. And I said, okay.
I do have one question about the movie, which is I don't understand how a man like Conor McGregor, with the kind of physique he has, was able during filming to subsist on a diet of scenery alone.
Yes.
Well, but clearly he did.
Yeah, not he did. An actor.
No, not an actor at all.
It didn't matter. Didn't matter one fucking bit.
It really didn't. It didn't ruin the movie, but it was very distracting how unbelievably bad at that he was. It's like you needed to make this guy quiet. You needed to take away all of his lines. I'm not talking like Ronda Rousey in the Fast and Furious movies bad, but like not that far from it.
Yeah. I think his character would have been raised a little bit if he was a mute.
I think he's misunderstood.
So we watched that.
What's the Scottish accent? That's what makes him misunderstood.
We watched that movie as well. But before we actually watched that, I made my wife watch the scene from Family Guy of Peter kicking everything and going, Roadhouse. Over and over and over again. It led us right into the watching of that movie, so that every time you hear the word Roadhouse, you think Roadhouse. So, yeah, that was a fun trip. That was a fun movie. Had a good time with that one.
Kick your problems
away.
Prior
to us, what?
I also watched The Flash, and it fucking sucked.
Yeah, that was not a good
movie. We talked about that on Stone Age Gamer, but I will say again, Dan was full of shit when he was saying that gratuitous bullshit scene at the end with the floaty balls of scenes from ghoulishly reanimated corpses. No, it makes sense and it's respectful. It's done. No, it's fucking not.
He said that
unnecessary. He did. He said it. We said it made sense within the context of the movie, and it was actually good. It was fucking stupid. It didn't make sense. It was completely unnecessary. It was 1,000%, hey, look what we can do.
And they didn't do it well. So here's the thing.
They didn't do it well. They really didn't.
It made sense for that movie, which made zero sense. You see?
It made sense in that it didn't make sense. Sure. Yes. Like, why not? We've come this far. Let's just do a bunch of dumbass shit. But like, as I'm watching the movie, I'm thinking, okay, so the whole point is that they accidentally created a world without a Superman, so they're going to bring all the worlds with Superman back. Oh, that's they didn't do that. No. Okay, this is just here. And there's Batman, too, and other versions of the... This is just stupid. This was just awful.
What it was is whomever was behind the creation of that scene had just finished watching the first Deadpool movie, where they do the car flipping and the bullets going through things. Like, they got that, and they went, oh, we need to do that. And that was the whole first scene with babies and microwaves and whatnot. And then they were
which was at least funny. Like, at least that scene was entertaining. They still kind of had me in the beginning of the movie. And then, like, really lost me.
They were going over the books, and they were like, and when I mean books, I mean like the financial books, not the comics, because don't be thinking that there's any of this story in any comic anywhere.
No.
They were like, hey, you wrote an extra zero for the special effects budget. Do you want to just use that, or do we want to give it back? Use it? Okay, we'll figure it out. And then they made that. That's what they
do. You know what 15 people know about? The Nicolas Cage Superman thing. Those 15 people are going to think this is really fucking rad, and everybody else is going to be like, is that Nicolas Cage
in this movie?
What?
Okay, listen, I just want to point out once again that sometimes there are really great things, and sometimes there are really bad editors. So, like, you know, maybe this is one of those scenarios, or maybe we should just remember DC doesn't make good movies.
They don't.
And
was that a Snyder movie?
I'm sure it
was in the Snyderverse.
Oh,
I believe his stupid universe fingers were on it. Like, let's bring back Michael Keaton Batman and fucking kill him. Okay, okay, sure. And George Clooney walks in the end because we really needed to be reminded of the George Clooney Batman. Like. What are you doing here? What are you doing? The last shot of the Flash is this fucking tooth falling out? It was a long way to go for a really not funny gag. God damn, that movie was bad.
Context of that movie was, You see what we did there?
Check this shit out. Isn't this awesome? Look, it's Christopher Reeve.
No, it's not.
Okay, and? What the fuck would Adam West have to do with any of this?
Like, I just want you to know that right now, it sounds like you're describing an episode of Family Guy. And I really have to say...
It's close.
That maybe really that might have been the point all along.
We're angrily talking about it, so they have won? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. Or maybe it's just the fact that, like, they got high and were like, yo, Family Guy is the best show ever. Want to make a movie? And then that's the only thing I can think of to justify the existence of this movie.
People with too much money.
I just hope that whatever James Gunn winds up doing takes its time and actually focuses on making good movies instead of like just making all the movies they can.
And then at some point we get a season 2 of Peacemaker.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Wow, way to tie that back into television, Karen. High five from across the country. Good job.
All I want is to get Henry Cavill back on The Witcher. Is that too much to ask?
That's not.
Oh my god, please.
It's not. Not only is that not happening, but it's fucking over.
Canceled.
Yeah.
We're getting the season.
Netflix,
of course they fucking canceled it. Right.
We're getting the season with the new guy, and then that's it. It's toast. It's done. It's over.
They killed it. They killed it!
Sons of bitches.
Zack Snyder killed my Henry Cavill Witcher. Fuck him.
God, Zack Snyder.
The guy's a fucking hack, man.
No, he's not. He's apparently the greatest
Apparently his Star Wars ripoff shit is so bad, like the second one is just getting...
Yeah, Rebel Moon.
Even the fans of the first one are like, I don't know about the second one.
I don't know.
Fucking hack.
Keep throwing money at him.
Why did you say that name?
Because it's a really common name.
Do you remember that meme thing, whatever, that they would do where it was like, Matt Damon? I feel like this is like Scott Snyder or Zack Snyder. Like, he's just a piece of shit and everyone says his name real weird and everyone hates him.
No, that's the thing. Not everybody hates him.
Everyone should hate him then, okay?
That's
everyone should.
Problem. A lot of people.
It's the same people that like hate Star Wars now. And like, it's so funny because I was watching this wonderful interview with George Lucas because they hold him up as this messiah of like, no, he would never have let this happen. Disney ruined Star Wars. George, it's like, the fuck are you watching? Yeah. Like, and we was in this interview. He was talking about this before he made the sale, like these so-called fans that want Star Wars to be, you know, fucking Terminator. And he's like, no, it's not. It was never supposed to be. It's supposed to be lighthearted and for kids. Don't take it that seriously. Mm-hmm. Just don't.
There are Muppets, for Christ's sake.
I mean, really?
But that's what these people want. And that's what these people want out of, like, that's why they love these Snyder movies so much. Because everything is dark and brooding and serious. Because that's what real people are like. Real life, serious, Superman.
So gritty.
Dressed up like a bat. Serious. Very serious.
Well, a guy who dressed like a bat, that is serious. That I will agree with.
Very serious.
That's very serious.
How dare there be comedy and levity in comic books?
Sorry, what? No. That's not a thing.
I'm not ready for that. I can't.
No. You want to keep that shit serious and Batman go nuts. That's kind of the point of the character. But like, the point of Superman is that he's the opposite. You tried to make Superman into Batman.
Well, I like that's the all right. So it's the perfect example of the difference between good and bad comic book content. Okay, you look at like the movie version of The Flash. Okay, what they tried to do, and compare that to like the first couple of seasons of the TV show Flash. Like that was good. Comic book television, because it teetered on that line of being mildly serious but still fun loving and open and good hearted, and like that's what that character was, or I should say is. then it got shoehorned into a world that was so sad, so upset about everything. And it's unnecessary. It really, like, the most popular movies that DC has put out are the Peacemakers and the, what was that, the Suicide Squads and like those that
James Gunn has touched,
know that they're what they are, kind of thing. Like, it knows it's comic books, funny pages, people have fun, enjoy it, don't contemplate suicide by the end of it.
The dramatic sequences mean a lot more in these kinds of situations when there's levity to bounce them off of.
Yeah.
When you have characters that are inherently somewhat silly, and they're, when bad things happen to those characters that you've grown to like because of their good nature, that's when those kinds of things mean more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If there's
whatever,
no light,
I'll be over here waiting for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yes.
I love it every time a trailer comes out, the way the internet picks it apart for the Easter eggs, and then the Liefeld Just Feet. Did you see that?
Oh, yep. Yes.
That was fantastic.
I spotted it before Kristen.
She did.
That's amazing.
Glorious. Apparently Rob Liefeld responded to it by posting a picture of his feet on Twitter.
You see, that guy doesn't get enough credit. That man loves fucking comic books. He loves that stuff. Yes, he may not be the best artist, but he did a lot for that universe and that world. So, all right, we have veered. So let's wrap this up. We're gonna
have some paper cut style train derailment. Huh?
Wow,
way off the rails.
Where's Dean? Dean here.
Speaking of deep cuts.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about Grimsburg. Stay tuned.
Hi, everyone. Chris here. Podcast listening is free, but podcast creation is not. That's why the Geekade Patreon exists. In an effort to help us pay the bills, we've got a Patreon page set up where you can gain access to our monthly podcast topic schedule, get early access to many of our shows, and more. If you'd like to help support Geekade and keep these shows running week after week, head over to the Geekade Patreon page, linked in the show notes of this very podcast.
When you hear the words cross-stitch, you probably think of a grandma lovingly making a Christmas stocking, a picture of a lighthouse, or maybe a Bible verse with flowers. But that's not what we do at Shoot the Moon Stitches. We take the old-fashioned art of cross-stitch and pair it with contemporary themes and imagery to create striking works of art that make the perfect gift for anyone who grew up with the internet and has a wicked sense of humor and an appreciation for pop culture. From cult favorite TV shows and movies to retro video games to TikTok trends, if it's made you smile, chances are we've stitched it. You can shop our selection of art and gifts by going to Etsy.com and searching Shoot the Moon Stitches. For all your fun, feminist, fandom fiber art needs, visit Shoot the Moon Stitches.
We are Safe at Home, the leading dog rescue in the heart of New Jersey. Are you searching for a loyal companion, a dog that will bring love and joy to your home? Look no further than Safe at Home. At Safe at Home, we believe in giving every dog a second chance. We rescue, rehabilitate, and find loving forever homes for dogs in need, right here in the Garden State. Our dogs are ready to make a lasting impact on your life. Each one has a unique story, a wagging tail, and an incredible capacity for love. When you adopt from Safe at Home, you're not just gaining a pet, you're becoming a part of our family. Our dedicated team ensures a seamless adoption process, providing ongoing support and guidance. With New Jersey's beautiful parks, beaches, and trails, you and your new furry friend will have endless opportunities for adventures and cherished memories. Safe at Home relies on the support of compassionate individuals like you. Your donations and volunteer work enable us to continue saving lives and finding forever homes for these amazing dogs. Join us in creating a safer, happier community for dogs in New Jersey. Together we can make a difference and give every dog the chance to feel safe at home. Visit our website or call us now to learn about how you can be a part of the Safe at Home mission. Safe at Home, because every dog deserves to be loved and protected. www.safeathomerescue.org.
We are back. Thank you much for paying attention to the commercials. Let's talk about Grimsburg. It was my pick this month. I happened to come across this in my, you know, trolling of the torrent world, and I saw the fact that it's John Hamm and Alan Tudyk voicing cartoon characters, so I'm like, I'm on board. So I chose for the homework a show called Grimsburg, Season 1, Episode 1, The Pilot. Grimsburg is about Marvin Flute, who might be the greatest detective ever. And he has one mystery still left that he can't crack. His family. He will follow every lead he's got to redeem himself with his ex-wife and that he never stopped loving. So that is a really weak description of what this show is. Season 1... The first episode is about Marvin Flute getting called back to duty. Marvin Flute being voiced by the John Hamm. He is tasked to find a killer that has gone into the town of Grimsburg, where he was from. He was kicked off of the police force. The ridiculousness of this show is beautiful. I enjoyed every second of this show because of the ridiculousness of it. John Hamm voices Marvin Flute, who is the lead detective. He has a wife and son. Wife who is a news reporter who was raised by bears, voiced by Aaron Hayes, and his son Stan Flute, who has an amazing imaginary friend. Stan is voiced by Rachel, I think it's Dratch is her name, or the pronunciation of her last name.
Yep, that's it.
And so I can't remember the name of the imaginary friend, okay, but it's voiced by Alan Tudyk, and the unfortunate part is the fortunate part is he plays two roles in this part. The imaginary friend of Stan, who is a sociopathic skeleton with flaming eyes that only Stan can see. And he also voices Dr. Rufus Pentos, who is Marvin Flute's nemesis. Also his childhood teacher that he had arrested, but the prisons were full and they had to release him, and to run out his term, he had to go teach in the local high school. So yeah, I did not know what to expect when watching this show. I think John Hamm is a very dry funny, but a very funny nonetheless, and I will watch anything that Mr. Tudyk is in. Anything. I was very pleasantly surprised when watching this. I found myself laughing out loud a bunch of times, and then a couple of thinkers as well. But I know how my wife felt about it. We will chime. I do. We're going to chime back in. I'm curious because I always want to know what Chris thinks. So, guys, go ahead. What did you think?
I was pretty excited to watch this show because I had seen the trailers for it. I'd see John Hamm and Alan Tudyk, and it's like, all right, I mean, count me in. This looks goofy. Let's give it a shot. And I was pretty disappointed by it, honestly.
I know, knew it. Wow, guys, I heard him through the walls.
I like the premise. I like the characters, like all their backstories, all the ideas here are great. And obviously the cast is great. I alluded to my joke in the beginning that John Hamm sounds an awful lot like Chris Maloney's Commissioner Gordon on Harley Quinn, but just not as funny. It's like the only problem with this show is the writing. Like the jokes you know, a couple things made me snicker, but I expected this to be fucking great. And so it was like, it was fine. A lot of the jokes didn't really seem to land. You know, everyone was acting the parts as well as they could, but just none of the jokes. Oh. It was all really great on paper. And then, like, in practice, it just didn't seem to come together in any way that really was worthy of the premise that it was trying to make happen, I guess.
Okay.
John Hamm, you know, again, like, they're delivering these jokes, like, as well as great as they could. And, like, some of them were, like, pretty funny stuff, especially toward the beginning. Like, in the beginning, I remember laughing a bit more, and by the end of it, I was pretty disillusioned by it. I was like, man, I wanted to like this one. I did, but there was something about it that didn't quite land for me, and I was pretty sad by that, because I really wanted to like this one.
Karen.
Who wrote it?
How did you think? What did you think, Karen?
Well, see, you let him go first, and we talked about this after watching it together, which we usually don't really do and probably shouldn't have done, because he said everything that I was going to say. Pretty much. I really did like the performances from everybody in this. Everybody is doing a great job with what they have to work with, particularly John Hamm and Alan Tudyk, and who else? I feel like there was one other person. Now I can't think of who it is.
I thought the cyborg partner, which is
he was great. He was maybe my favorite part. Kevin Michael Richardson.
Yeah,
I think that's who that is. Oh, yeah. And the mayor. Was played by Jamie Camille from Jane the Virgin,
yep.
Who is a special place in my heart for that guy, and I just love whenever he pops up in anything. So that made me really happy. But yeah, the cyborg sidekick might have been my favorite part. something about the way here he was just like super positive about everything. it reminded me a little bit of something else that we then saw in an episode of Fallout that we watched right after this, which I won't go into too much detail because I think Chris will probably talk about Fallout next month. But it was Matt Berry's robot character from that episode of Fallout. It's like, this is the same thing.
So not feeling it.
But yeah, I wanted to like it more, but I agree with Chris's assessment that the writing was just not up to snuff.
Now, granted, we only watched the pilot episode.
Right.
This could get a lot better.
It has potential.
Like, all the puzzle pieces are here. It was just that one episode, you know, the only one episode that we watched, just like, not quite there yet.
And it's... Hun, go ahead.
What? You tell them. You know how I feel.
So I was sitting beside you whilst you were watching it. So I think I enjoyed it far more than everybody. I think I enjoyed it far more than you two. I think I just enjoyed it a little bit more than you did, hon. But go ahead.
Yeah, I would say I did enjoy it. I felt like it was funny at first. And then it was... This is the thing I have a hard time with like all types of humor, is when it's like... joke, 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 joke. And then I realized, like, all of the... like, everything feels like a one-liner. And it kind of felt like when I watched Family Guy, it was like that. And it's a harder, like, kind of humor for me to appreciate sometimes. But what I would say is that I think the reality for me was that when we watched this episode, we watched it yesterday. I have had an exceptionally long work week and I have been having trouble sleeping. And so when we sat down to watch it, I was so tired.
So you were delusional.
And I really feel like I was slightly delusional. So part of me was like I remember watching some of the jokes and be like, and I think I would have laughed more if I was like more awake, but that's all my brain had the capacity to give me.
which is funny because like you are absolutely correct that it was joke after joke after joke after joke. There was a lot of punchlines being slung at you, and I granted they like not all of them hit. I don't want anybody to think that I thought this was a phenomenal show. Like I enjoyed it quite a bit because I concentrated on the jokes that hit. Like there was a point in time where Dr. Rufus was trying to be sneaky about how he's helping Marvin Flute, and a student's parent interjects and is talking about how she doesn't like the fact that her child feels triggered if it has to read in the front of the class. And like he's pushing her out of the classroom so that he could switch the lights off and be mysterious again. And then that scene wraps up at the very end of it. He goes outside to talk to, in essence, the angry parent that is sitting out there waiting for him. Like I saw that, and that made me laugh because I thought that was just a throwaway bit. They wrapped it up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed all of the parts with Alan. I really did. I find him so absurdly funny. the son was okay. I accepted the son's character on the screen because when the son's character was on the screen, so was the imaginary friend, which was voiced by Alan.
Mr. Flesh.
Is that what it was, Mr. Flesh?
He was my favorite.
Yeah, it's like, and it was like I said, it was ridiculous. That character was wacko.
Yeah.
It was over the top. All of the characters that show up in the show, there's something ridiculous about them, but it's just levels or degrees. Like the chief of police is a flat earther, and that is pivotal because it's part of the like he decodes all the clues because she doesn't believe in recycling, and the beat hits like, yeah, like they're asking you to spend more money on something that's already used. It's a scam. Like that joke was just slid in a litany of other jokes. So I can understand why.
When she spun the flat globe and it made
and everybody
globe,
stopped and looked at it. That's just as funny.
That was funny. There were definitely, I didn't hate the show. I was just disappointed by it because I wanted to love it. Instead, I just thought it was fine. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of voice recognizable voices in it too that I thought was nice. And oddly, like I recognized most of them from outside of animation. Like if I didn't know it was John Hamm, I would not have recognized his voice because he is putting on a character. But the son,
if I didn't know it was John Hamm, I would have thought it was Will Arnett.
Okay. There you go.
I can see that.
But like the police chief, that's her name is Wendy. Like Wendy McLendon, I think that's how it's pronounced.
She's been in other things.
She is from the police the spoof
Reno
cop
911.
Show. Yes, Reno 911. And like I recognize her voice. Like I heard that, I'm like, oh, I recognize her. And the mayor, I recognized his voice. Oddly, the people that I know mostly from anime, like I didn't know that the cyborg was Kevin, because usually his voice is much deeper. Like he does gravel voice very well. He does sultry smooth very well. And that's not what this character was. He was silly and upbeat. And like, it's interesting how the voice he put to that character. I don't know or how I felt about the wife. I feel like that was like an afterthought because they're hinging the show on him getting back with his family. I'm curious how her being raised by bears is going to, I mean, outside of the way she eats, like, I'm curious.
When she jammed that entire chicken in her purse, I laughed.
That was amazing.
What?
I was like, wow, they really, somebody there must have met me.
Yeah. I'm more than just a woman who was raised by bears. She's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. I was raised by bears. I think I could take it.
Yeah.
Like, that was funny.
Yeah, that got me.
The interaction between those family members, because the son is so sad, and Marvin just being completely oblivious, like, 98% of the time, and then wrapping up nicely at the end. It's like, I'm saddened that I expected you guys to like this more than you did, and it was maybe it was because I had high hopes for it too, and I enjoyed it because I was not as I didn't have super high expectations for it.
I didn't know what I was getting into, so I like, didn't even understand. I didn't know the premise. Like, I knew nothing going into this. And like I said, I think I would have had more fun if I had been more awake, but I did not like I didn't dislike it by any means. Mm-hmm. I was just like I was laughing more at first, and then it was kind of like, okay. But I peopled so much yesterday, and I just think that at some point it breaks my brain. So I would like to watch more episodes and see how I feel going forward.
I did watch it twice. Like, I watched the episode, you know, a week and a half ago, mm-hmm. and then I watched it again last night. And there were points in time where I stopped it and then laughed because, like there are so many jokes that there were some that I missed the first time through. Like, as we're watching movies, if I see foreshadowing, I will actively say foreshadowing. And there was a point in time where Dr. Rufus kept saying the parrot overshadows the sun, because you keep saying that it must be important. I'm like, that's foreshadowing. He's foreshadowing. Like, hey, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I will watch more of this because, like I said, I will watch anything. Alan Tudyk is a goddamn national treasure, and he does. Like, I fell down a rabbit hole of YouTube videos of him just seamlessly jumping from voice to voice to voice. He is such a talented actor that I guess it just made it better for me. Man, and I knew it. Like, as we were watching this, I said, Chris is not, I telling you, Chris is not gonna like this show. Like, this is gonna be something up, and I don't know what it is, but something's not gonna sit right with him. And I'll try harder next time.
Didn't make the show.
Yeah. Yes, but I think about it.
Evan really tries. I think all he wants in life, Chris, is for you to just like his stuff.
I do. Like, I do. A lot of times, Chris doesn't like my stuff, and that's hurtful.
Yeah. He just wants to feel loved by you, Chris, and only you. Validate his existence, please, and thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not everything can be the cinematic masterpiece that was War of the Worlds. I mean, it's just the way it is.
I mean, nobody is saying
that,
Chris.
We're going to set the bar.
Whoa, easy, okay? Longest car ride ever.
God, I hate that movie. No, I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it, and I'd be interested to see where it goes from the pilot episode. Like, again, I have way too many things on my plate as it is to actually spend the time on it, but yeah.
And that's the thing, like, I was trying to find something for us to watch that would be like a snapshot enjoyable kind of thing, like something that we don't have to watch all of the episodes for or whatnot, and just find like quick enjoyment from. And I looked at the cast and I figured, like, this could be something, especially if it's an episodical cartoon, because a lot of times now, all of the stuff that is new is deep watching. Like, you have to watch. If you like it, there is a lot to, even if you're slightly interested in it, there's a lot to watch. There's no more episodical television anymore. And like that makes it, I don't know if it makes it harder for them to make quality content, because it used to be like, all we have to do is worry about, you know, making a good 22 minutes or a good 45 minutes. And now it's, we have to
Shorzy.
Make, what's that?
Shorzy.
That's Canadians. They got that shit figured out. And even still, there is a through line.
Oh, there's an absolute through line, but you don't need to watch. This is like Letterkenny. You don't need to watch every episode in order. Like
That's a fantastic
Letterkenny
example.
Letterkenny and Shorzy. There you go.
Fantastic examples. And like, I want more of that, because it's hard to dedicate. Like, I want to watch Fallout. Like, I want to. I know that there's, what, 6 episodes? I know if I watch and like the first,
eight.
Is there 8 now? Okay, there's 8. Like, if I watch and like the first one, I'm going to have to watch the other 7. Like, that's just going to have to happen.
Yeah, I will say that's a thing, like, you and I had talked about, I want to watch the show Shogun, and I hadn't started it yet, and, like, it feels like such a daunting task right now to jump into a new show, because I have so much to do every day, and I feel like slightly overwhelmed. And then I feel like on top of that, there's so much television and I'm behind on all of it. And some of it is really good television that I'm excited to watch. We started watching, what was it? The new season of Ghosts had come out. We started watching that. We loved it. We were enjoying the episodes. There was absolutely nothing wrong with it. Dropped it. Didn't even go back to it.
Well,
completely forgot about it.
That, and I will defend this, when there was a big break in between, like, episode 4 and 5.
Yeah.
But, like, that is another one that's a lot of fun, and it's borderline episodical, but there is still a heavy through line. But, like, I watch a show called Not Dead Yet, which is a cute...
I love that show.
It's a cute show, and it's not heavy, and there's not a... Like, there is no serious time investment.
It's a thing of the week kind of show.
Yeah. But, you know, I watched Tracker because I did nothing. I'm not dedicated to it. So I don't have to, like, really watch it. And it's a few and far between for shows that you can watch 45 minutes of and say, I'm good. Like, that's it. Like, I don't have to watch the rest of it. Or, I enjoyed that shit. Let's watch the next one.
Yeah, I think
because
that's
of
the
enjoyment,
difference.
Not of necessity kind of thing.
Right. Like, but you're looking for stuff that you can just pick up and put down, and you have, which is interesting to me, because you have more time to watch television right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm over here like, let me watch things that have deep and compelling storylines that really take concentration and time, and I'm going to take a 6 to 8 month, maybe a year hiatus and go back to it, and who the fuck are those characters? Like, I don't know why I'm like this. But also, it makes me wonder, how did we ever watch television in the past? Just curious. Like,
I've been watching, like, 90s recap shows, like, you know, when they talk about the decade that is the 90s. Mm-hmm. And at least 1 to 2 episodes of every one of those shows is about must-see TV. Everyone. And, like, that was a life that we all lived. Everyone on this podcast, that it was most of the time, it was Thursday nights. That was that you had to be there to watch, whether it be Friends or Seinfeld or what, like, that was a thing. And then, like, the Family Friday shows where, you know, everything from, you know, Home Improvement, the Full House line of shows. That was all those, you know, stereotypical white funny families. You know, and that's not a thing anymore. Like, those were, like, disposable television. Like, you didn't have to watch it all. When you sat down, you enjoyed it. But you sat down to watch it because you enjoyed it. You felt the necessity to it, not like it was because of enjoyment, not because of storyline, or because it's, you know, 15 episodes that just released in one clump, and now I have to watch, you know, Shogun, that I know is phenomenal. I know it is. I have no doubts in my mind, but I don't have, like, the emotional bandwidth to watch that much heavy television.
Too many feelings. Evan can't handle it.
Listen, I get upset watching half an episode of The Daily Show. Like, it's no lie. Like, it's I'll watch the Jon Stewart episode. That's it. The rest of the week, I don't care who it is. So
you're special.
Yeah, I try. I try. Oh,
well,
it is what it is. Can't all be winners, as I say. So, all right. I think that's it. I'm upset. I'm sad. I wanted you guys to enjoy that. Eh.
We did enjoy it. We just didn't love it.
How about this? Let me rephrase it. I wanted you to love it. I wanted you to like it as much as I did. How's that?
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Good enough.
All right. I guess that about wraps it up. This quick second half. Whenever we don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but what about Chris?
Mm. What about Chris?
Chris has his spiel. Whenever he's ready.
Well, this week's episode isn't filmed before a live studio audience, but it is fueled by feedback from listeners like you, and you can get in touch with us in a multitude of ways. We have an official Geekade Discord, where there's an entire This Week's Episode channel dedicated to all things TV talk, and of course, the regular Geekade social media accounts linked to in the show notes. The four of us can be found in various ways. You can read my work at StoneAgeGamer.com and in the pages of Nintendo Force magazine. Karen, where can people find you?
Check me out at STM Stitches on Facebook, Instagram, Etsy, and TikTok.
Angie, where can people find you?
You can find me at www.angelafernot.com.
And Evan, what about you?
TalesofCapeFear.com. Check it out.
If you need to know more about the shows we discussed tonight or what we'll be watching in the future, have a look at our show notes. If you have any other questions at all, we can always be reached at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words of this week's episode in the subject line so we know who you're trying to reach. This show is available anywhere fine podcasts are sold, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and more. And wherever you decide to listen, please like, comment, subscribe, leave reviews, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. Again, as always, keep your eyes on Geekade for fresh, original content. Evan, back to you.
All right, Chris, it's your turn. What is our homework?
Well, our homework is going to be fucking Fallout,
fuck
guys.
You!
I knew it. I'm not mad about it.
Oh, boy. Look, I'm going to say technically season one, episode one, but you're not wrong. You're going to want to watch.
Have you watched any of it yet?
We're not all of it yet. We're four episodes in, and it's fucking fascinating. And I don't know shit about the video games.
Okay.
I know like some tangential information because I've sold the video games. Like, I know that there's something called Brotherhood of Steel. I know there's a game called New Vegas. Like, I know what a Pip-Boy is. Like, just the very basics just from existing in the world of video games. But I have never played a Fallout game. I've never been interested in playing a Fallout game. What's that?
The outfit looks familiar.
Exactly. The outfit looks familiar. But what you need to know is that the show stars Walt Goggins. And that's all I needed to be sold on it. So, yeah, no, we're four episodes in. I'm utterly fascinated by it. It's a really good show. But I'll save that for next time.
It's funny. I had seen something, I'm going to guess, on a Facebook page somewhere. It was a gentleman saying, hey, for all you guys out there who don't think you're attractive enough to find yourself a girl, there are thousands of girls out there right now writing fanfic about a noseless Goggins. So there's hope for everybody.
I saw something similar to that, too. Yeah, it's a... It's an experience. I don't want to say anything more, but that's what we should watch. I'd like to talk about the season if possible, but at the very least, we'll cover season one, episode one. Go.
All right. Very good. There's your homework. Fallout season one, episode one, season one in its entirety. God dang it. All right. From all of us here at this week's episode, I'm Evan.
I'm Angie.
I'm Karen.
I'm John Hamm.
Good night.
And this concludes our broadcast day.